A substantial loss of life and millions without power after Hurricane Ian pounds Florida. Here in the Philippines, the damage caused by Typhoon Karding on schools now pegged at over 8 billion pesos. A former prison's chief who recanted his testimony against former Senator Laila De Lima fails to affirm his action in court. And later on in the program, we'll discuss the implementation of a new law, which some are calling a game changer in the fight against online child sexual exploitation. Alan Nunez of Child Fund Philippines joins us for that. Hi, I'm Carmina Constantino. Dateline Philippines begins right now. Hey, thanks for joining us. For those of you watching us on YouTube and on Facebook, glad you could join us today. Our top story at this hour, the trail of catastrophic destruction left by Hurricane Ian in Florida now coming to light. The monster storm triggered storm surges, sending ocean water into homes and businesses, cutting off coastal communities. One of the hardest hit areas is Charlotte County. The county commissioner told BBC at least 10 people died there since the storm struck. U.S. President Joe Biden warned Hurricane Ian may end up being Florida's deadliest storm ever. While there's still no official death toll, Biden expects a substantial loss of life. He also praised Florida's emergency services as they enter zones devastated by the storm.
We're continuing to see deadly rainfall, catastrophic storm surges, roads and homes flooded. We're seeing millions of people without power and thousands hunkered down in schools and community centers. First thing this morning is when I talked to Governor DeSantis and again offered the fullest federal support. Earlier this week, I approved his request for the pre-landfall emergency declaration to provide direct federal assistance to the state for emergency protective measures to save lives, including search and rescue and shelter and food. My message to the people of Florida and to the country is, at times like this, America comes together. We're going to pull together as one team, as one America.
Biden says he will visit Florida once conditions permit. Hurricane Ian is now forecast to hit South Carolina Friday. Weather officials warn of deadly storm surges and powerful winds. Here at home, over 8 billion pesos will be needed to repair schools damaged by Typhoon Karding. That's according to the latest damage assessment by the Education Department. Its spokesperson, Attorney Michael Poa, says around 165 schools were damaged. The agency will coordinate with local government units to help affected schools locate temporary learning spaces.
Para po hindi maantala, kasi ang protocol po, pag ganyang may infrastructure damage ang mga paaralan, automatically, magsuswitch po yung mga learners sa tinatawag nating alternative delivery modes, which is basically distance learning or blended kung kaya. Kung hindi po kaya, what we are doing now is we are coordinating with the various LGUs para tingnan kung meron silang mga temporary spaces na pwedeng ibigay sa atin na available na, tulad ng mga covered courts or iba pang rooms kung pwedeng gamitin. We are looking to download funds doon sa ating mga regions para po masimulan na yung kailangan gawin upang magkaroon ng temporary learning spaces or other interventions. But this is a developing situation, so we'll have to monitor po talaga kung ilan yung magagawa.
And let's now get an update on the local weather. Pag-asa forecaster Veronica Torres now joins us for that. Veronica, good afternoon to you. Go ahead.
Good afternoon, Ms. Carmina, and to all of our listeners. So here's the latest with regards to our weather. So the Intertropical Convergence Zone, or ITCZ, is affecting southern Mindanao. For the weather condition of Metro Manila and the rest of the country, we'll be expecting partly cloudy to cloudy skies with isolated rain showers or thunderstorm, mostly in the afternoon and the evening. Also, we don't have any gale warning raised in any parts of the country, so our fishermen can venture to the sea. And also for the weather this weekend in Metro Manila, we'll be expecting the same weather today, partly cloudy to cloudy skies with isolated rain showers and thunderstorms. And that's the latest from Pag-asa Weather Forecasting Center, Veronica Torres.
Thanks a lot, Veronica, to you and the rest of the team there. Thanks for all that you do back here in the newsroom. In other news, a witness against former Senator Laila De Lima was supposed to affirm his recantation before the court today, but that didn't push through. Mike Navalio now joins us to tell us why. Mike.
Sir? Ambrose po kayo?
OIC Rafael Ragos. Was unable to testify before Muntinlupa Court to affirm his affidavit recanting his allegations against former Senator Laila De Lima. Ragos, accompanied by his lawyer, left at past 9 this morning, spending just a little over an hour in court after the prosecution opposed his taking the witness stand. According to his lawyer, Michael De Castro, the Department of Justice filed on Thursday night a motion for reconsideration of the Muntinlupa Judge Abraham Joseph Alcantara's order allowing Ragos to testify. The judge, he said, decided to give the defense 5 days to comment on the motion. The court is expected to resolve the motion before the next hearings set on October 28 and November 4. Deputy City Prosecutor Darwin Cañete cited procedural rules in opposing Ragos' testimony. Ragos claimed in his affidavit that he was merely coerced by former Justice Secretary Vitaliano Aguirre II to implicate De Lima. Aguirre has denied the claim. De Lima's lawyer said hope Ragos' affirmation of his recantation would deal a big blow to the government's case against the former senator. Ragos has claimed that he personally delivered a total of 10 million pesos to De Lima's former bodyguard, Ronnie Dayan, allegedly in De Lima's house in Parañaque in November and December 2012, was instrumental in keeping the drug case against Dayan and De Lima alive. A Muntinlupa court denied their demur to evidence last year, essentially a motion to dismiss due to insufficiency of prosecution evidence, citing Ragos' testimony. The same court denied their bail plea for the same reason. The prosecution, however, downplayed the effect of the recantation, saying it is frowned upon by the courts. Ragos' lawyer, for his part, said they have filed a motion to expunge or remove from the records all of Ragos' prior testimony, which were supposedly executed without the assistance of an independent counsel. This would render the need to affirm his affidavit of recantation unnecessary. De Castro, Ragos' lawyer, now expressed concern for his client's safety. Ragos had not been seen in public since he executed an affidavit in April, taking back his claims. He was reported to be outside the country for safety reasons. Prosecutors, however, challenged Ragos' lawyers to file the necessary motions in court to ensure his safety. In the same hearing this morning, Diane's son testified that he was in fact in Pangasinan during the dates when the delivery of drug money was supposed made in De Lima's house in Parañaque. And that's the latest, Carmina.
Thanks a lot, Mike Navallo, there joining us on the line. And back here in the newsroom, Philippine President Ferdinand Marcos Jr. commits to initiatives that will improve efficiency at the private sector workers' pension fund social security system. Our very own Joyce Balancho now joins us with an update. Joyce, what more can you tell us?
Yes, Carmina, Philippine President Ferdinand Marcos Jr. graced the 65th anniversary of the Social Security System, or SSS, in Quezon City this Friday morning. In his speech, he recognized the agency's contributions as well as achievements for the past 6 decades in terms of expanding membership coverage and providing enhanced benefits to Filipinos. He said that SSS personifies the essence of a government that is reliable and always ready to help people no matter what the circumstances are. Marcos also took note of the good programs of the agency, including the Contribution Subsidy Provider Program, the flexible payment schemes for fishermen and farmers, as well as the Contribution Penalty Condonation Program and the Consolidated Loan Program. The chief executive said these initiatives provide safety nets and guarantees for Filipinos, especially at times of tragedy or crisis. In its anniversary, the president also reminded the agency to continue embodying excellence in giving public service and to always put the best interests of the Filipino people above everything. As president, he assured SSS that he would remain committed to initiatives that would improve the efficiency and productivity of the agency. Also in the program, the president led the giving of Balikat ng Bayan Awards to organizations, including banks and media entities that have been recognized as top partners of the SSS. This included Top Employer, Best Collection Partner, Best Disbursement Partner, Best Media Partner, and other special citations. Carmina.
Thanks a lot, Joyce Balancho. Back here in the newsroom, a partyless lawmaker warns of over 100 billion pesos in alleged pork barrel funds in the House-approved 2023 budget. Kabataan partyless representative Raul Manuel has flagged the 149 billion peso lump sum allocation tagged as support for infrastructure projects and social programs. He says Malacañang will have total discretion on how to spend this budget once funding has been secured for it.
yung discretionary funds, it can be a very dangerous allocation, lalo na't nababypass yung power ng Congress. Supposedly, it has the power of the purse. It discusses thoroughly how we allocate public funds. And we must not delegate that power to the executive branch, to the president or the cabinet. Kaso nga lang, dun po sa sip-sip, no, yung ganung item sa ating budget, yung support for infrastructure projects and social programs, we see once again, and it entails a very huge amount, yung pagpasa dun sa executive branch ng ganung power.
Manuel was one of three lawmakers who voted against the passage of the proposed national budget at the lower house. He believes the process was rushed for the sake of meeting a deadline. Senators resumed their probe on or into the Education Department's controversial purchase of allegedly overpriced laptops. The lawmakers flagged inconsistencies in the statements of some education officials who tried to justify the legal basis for the deal. Sherry Antores with a full story.
The Blue Ribbon Committee of the Philippine Senate expects to wrap up its investigation into the controversial multi-billion laptop procurement project soon. The panel held another hearing on Thursday, and discussion centered on the different memoranda of agreement being cited by the resource persons. Director Marcelo Bragado Jr. of the Education Department's Procurement and Management Service reveals there are three agreements involved in the 2.4 billion peso laptop project. One was dated February 16, 2021, another April 29, 2021, and a third MOA signed on May 28, 2021. Bragado also tells the committee that they antedated their May 28 approved MOA to February 16, which was the agreement being cited by Education Undersecretary Annalyn Sevilla. To back his claims, Bragado presented a journal which contains dates and supposed progress of the project.
We showed the committee, Your Honor, that as February 26, 2021, we just started with the negotiation for the drafting of the MOA. And that amendment and restatement of the 2017 MOA is the initial draft that we are trying to finalize so that we can have a MOA for the 2.4B laptop. The role is to coordinate with PSTBM and report to USEC, Sevilla, and the task force, ASEC Malana, also the progress of this talks with the PSTBM.
I cannot comment po, Your Honor, on the draft MOA shown to me because I am not part of the discussion or kung ano ba po yung sinasabi niya na usapan nila. Hindi po kami kasama doon, Your Honor.
Sevilla, however, later admitted that they initially used what she described as the agency's 2017 mother MOA as basis to craft a final agreement. But Senate Minority Leader Aquilino Coco Pimentel III refuses to buy Sevilla's explanations.
The 2017 MOA could not have envisioned or covered the 2.4 billion laptop purchase because bayanihan to yun eh. Iba funding nitong tweet, nakaganito ha. April 29, 2021, aminado po kayo na nanag-negotiate pa sa whatever you call it, amended or supplemental or new MOA to govern the 2.4. And then sasabihin nyo na anyway, pwede matuloy kasi may mother MOA ng 2017. So, and then sa sworn statement nyo na submit sa committee ito, you referred to a February 16, 2021 MOA. Do you see the contradiction there na April 28? Aminado ka ngayon na wala pang MOA.
Senator Sherwin Gatchalian also questioned the validity of the so-called mother MOA.
Kung wala pong MOA in as late as May. So what is the basis for this procurement when PSDBM started buying the items, procuring the items? What is the legal basis?
If there's no MOA, there's no foundation or platform, then there's no legal standing. No? Glance through the 2017 MOA, and indeed there are there is an attachment or an annex of what goods will be procured under that MOA. So I suppose the what goods can be procured will be confined under that annex, Your Honor, unless you amend it.
And for the end users, the Teachers Dignity Coalition says many of their members decided to return the laptops, which the Commission on Audit confirms during the hearing were indeed overpriced.
Meron naman po tayo mga teachers po na nag-canvas no, after matanggap ito, no, using the same specs po, no, kinanvas sila sa store at nakita nila no, na meron pong, for example, no, one teacher from Aurora Province po, no, nung nakita niya po yan, sinoli niya kaagad, no? Kasi ang mahal daw, no? So that 60,000 nagbabari po, by the way, yung presyo may 58, may 60 plus, no? Hindi niya na sinoli niya na doon sa kanilang property custodian kasi baka pag nasira, no, in her possession, baka pabayaran sa kanya.
The Blue Ribbon Panel is looking to hold one more hearing before crafting a committee report. Sherian Torres, ABS-CBN News.
Senator Jinggoy Estrada, meanwhile, questioned the Education Department's seeming favoritism in choosing suppliers. In Thursday's hearing, Estrada revealed one firm, Advanced Solutions Incorporated, or ASI, bagged 6 billion pesos in deals for the DepEd's ICT requirements from 2013 to 2021. Estrada said this should have raised some red flags.
Based on my research, is it accurate to say that Advanced Solution has been awarded similar contracts for the supply and delivery of DepEd's IT or computer requirements since 2015? Am I correct?
Yes, Your Honor, as far as I know.
The consistency under which ASI or the Advanced Solution Incorporated has been awarded these contracts, does that not raise suspicion? Well, sa dami ng in-award nyo sa ASI, bakit mukhang may favoritism kayo dyan? This is very glaring. You understand? Because you awarded several contracts in favor of ASI in billions of pesos. And based on my own research, umaabot na ng 6 na bilyon. O, hindi ba katakataka yan? Bakit hindi kayo nagsagawa ng investigasyon? From the very start.
The University of the Philippines set to resume full face-to-face classes in all undergraduate courses in February. The announcement came days after the senator, or Senator Pia Cayetano, hit UP and other state universities and colleges for only partially implementing in-person classes. Details of the new policy still being finalized.
The preparations for this are really long. No, apart from the LGU, as I said, meron pang CHED, meron pang IATF, meron pang DOH. In the second semester of this academic year, our undergraduate courses will all meet face-to-face. But there will be some considerations about different pedagogies and assessments. So, walang uniform number, it depends on the class talaga.
The Octa Research Group alarmed over the continued uptick in COVID cases in Metro Manila. It says, aside from higher levels of mobility due to the resumption of in-person learning, the eased face mask rule is also contributing to the rise in infections. The group urges the public not to completely ditch the use of masks outdoors.
The rise in cases in the National Capital Region is driven by, number one, the presence of more contagious variants. Number two, yung high levels of mobility. Ho, nag-face-to-face classes na tayo. Marami ho nasa labas na po. Tapos pangatlo, marami ho hindi na nagko-comply sa minimum public health standards. Lalo na, although we're still trying to observe, no? If we get more data conclusive, na talagang malaking impact po yung sa masks.
Singapore scientists develop a test kit that can determine a person's immunity against COVID-19 and its variants within 10 minutes. One of the researchers, Dr. Emma Jia, told ANC the test is 92% accurate. She adds, though it's not yet available for public use, they're now trying to get the necessary approvals from regulators to get it into production.
Immunity is actually quite different from individuals, as just now from the previous report, we know that from different areas, different people get infected and different rate of infection. So it is really an individual response. So this test is actually giving the opportunity to monitor individuals' response so that we can give the vaccine booster based on each one's immunity response. In this way, we can actually regulate the vaccine program for defending the SARS-CoV-2 infection.
The death toll due to Typhoon Karding rises to a dozen. Bianca Dava now joins us with that story. Bianca, what more can you tell us?
Fermina, according to the NDRRMC's latest report, the number of deaths due to Super Typhoon Karding has now climbed to 12. We have recorded one more drowning incident, which resulted in another individual's death in Tanay, Rizal. To summarize, the other 11 deaths reported include the five rescuers who perished in San Miguel, Bulacan, one individual who drowned after a dike got destroyed in Zambales, another person who died in a motorcycle accident in a flooded street in Zambales, one individual who drowned in Antipolo, Rizal, and another who was buried in a landslide in Quezon Province. Six people, meanwhile, remain missing. We have five from Mercedes Camarines Norte and another one in Patnangunan or Patnanungan, Quezon Province. The NDRRMC also reported that 52 people were injured due to the typhoon. As of now, we have about 4,000 families staying in evacuation centers. They are among the more than 245,000 families who were affected by the onslaught of Karding in various areas in Luzon. Affected houses have now reached more than 57,000, with 50,000 partially damaged and about 7,000 totally destroyed. So far, more than 36.5 million pesos worth of assistance was already provided to affected individuals, according to the NDRRM. Carmina?
Thanks a lot, Bianca Dava. We're going to take a break now. Up ahead, a landmark measure seeking to protect Filipino children from online harm lapsed into law earlier this year. But with the internet being so vast, how can this measure address online threats? We'll discuss this when Dateline Philippines returns. Stay with us here on ANC. Back. There's still a Dateline Philippines here on ANC. Here's another look at our headlines this noon. A substantial loss of life and millions without power after Hurricane Ian pounds Florida. Here in the Philippines, the damage caused by Typhoon Karding on schools now pegged at over 8 billion pesos. And a former prison's chief who recanted his testimony against a former Senator Laila de Lima fails to affirm his action in court. Back with more news, the Philippines has become one of the world's largest sources of online child sexual exploitation cases due to poverty, aggravated by this pandemic. But there's hope the country can put a stop to this with the Anti-Online Sexual Abuse Bill lapsing into law last July 30th. Joining us now to discuss how government can best implement this law is Alan Nunez. He's an advocacy specialist of the organization Child Fund of Philippines. Alan, good afternoon to you. Thanks for joining us today. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Carmina. Thank you for inviting Child Fund.
All right. Very, very important topic we are about to discuss. You know, Alan, people are talking about the health of the economy, health protocols, how this pandemic is still raging in parts of the world, how the Philippines is doing in terms of battling this pandemic. But not a lot of people are asking, how are the children doing? In the midst of this pandemic and even before this pandemic struck, under the backdrop or against the backdrop of child exploitation online. Give us a clear picture first of what the current situation is or the current state of children being exploited and abused online, Alan.
Carmina, the Philippines remains the top global source of child sexual abuse and exploitation materials. It actually, like for example, in 2018, there are at least 600,000 child sexual abuse and exploitation materials from the Philippines were shared and sold online. And at the height of the COVID-19 pandemic, the cases jumped to about 256% increase. And as of now, the numbers are still the same. It doesn't go down. Mm-hmm. And based on the previous, the studies conducted by Child Fund and other organizations here in the country, the reasons why the Filipino children are vulnerable is that because Filipino children are the ideal targets of the sexual predators lurking online.
What makes them the ideal target?
Number one, like you mentioned a while ago, because of the widespread poverty, and it has exacerbated by the COVID-19 situation. And then there's the cheap internet and smartphones, and the Filipino children's ability to speak English well, and OSAEC as means of family income, and of course, the lack of proper parental or guardian supervision.
All those rolled into one. Really, yes. That's a trap right there for the Filipino child. But how does it even begin? Let's first try to understand this problem. Mm-hmm. How does it begin? How does a child even find himself or herself all of a sudden in this dark abyss of exploitation?
There are a lot of ways to lure a child. The sexual predators are getting smarter and smarter. They usually pretend to be, you know, to start a relationship with the child, whether it's a friendly relationship, and then later on become a romantic relationship. That's for other cases, and they pretend to be a child, and then become girlfriend or boyfriend with another child online. Mm. And simply because the children, their activities online are unsupervised.
Right.
And in fact, in the Philippines, one of three internet users are children. Mm-hmm. And 90% of them can access internet and whenever or wherever they want to.
You were sort of explaining how grooming is, mm-hmm. right? And when grooming happens in real life, you know, we have eyes to see that, and it makes it, you know, kind of easier to detect it. But when the grooming happens online, what are the challenges there for parents, for guardians to be able to detect this?
There's a digital divide now. Sometimes parents is not that internet savvy as children, and they do not know exactly what children is going or doing online, and that's the particular issue we need to address. We need to close that particular gap, the digital divide, and we need to tell the children. We need to capacitate the parents on how to take care of their children, and we need to capacitate them that. They need to tell the children that, you know, how you treat people offline or people in real world, that's also how you should be treating them online, mm-hmm. on the internet.
And so especially, Alan, with the way things are going now, and especially during the mm-hmm. pandemic, when kids were locked up in their homes, and sometimes the parents, even if they don't want their children to be online, paminsan iniisip nila, okay na yan, nalilibang yung mga bata. Pero sa paglilibang na ito, hindi na natin nakikita, ilang mga magulang hindi na nakikita na napabilang na pala sa isang chat group, meron na palang nakakausap. So that's a key point right there for parents to be involved and for organizations like yours as well, to sort of keep the conversation going. But we cannot go it alone. How can government intervene? And with this law that recently lapsed into law, how will this make things a little bit better or improve the situation, Alan?
We're very optimistic about this, and we're happy that this particular bill has lapsed into law, so it's now Republic Act. Republic Act number, but it's the anti-OSAEC, online sexual abuse and exploitation of children, and anti child sexual abuse and exploitation material. This will provide government agencies and law enforcement better tools to go after the perpetrators, because like, for example, it repealed the Anti-Child Pornography Act. So we changed the terminology. In this particular new law, the online sexual abuse and exploitation is now clearly defined, unlike before. So we also changed, we will not be using child pornography anymore. Instead, we will be using child sexual abuse and exploitation, because pornography is something that you need to provide consent, and we all know that children cannot provide consent.
Well, I don't think there's an IRR already out there, right? That's still going to be crafted, Alan.
It will be, and in fact, that's one thing we are helping the government with. We are invited to in the drafting of the implementing rules and regulations, and we are very optimistic that it will be developed soon. Mm-hmm. And we will make sure that once the implementing rules and regulations are in place, we're gonna scrutinize it. We will make sure that everything will be according to what the law says.
Mm-mm. But what's important to be there? What cannot be not there as government drafts now the implementing rules and regulations of this anti-online sexual abuse bill? What is the non-negotiable that should be there?
Aside from the what I mentioned a while ago, the clear definition of the online sexual abuse and exploitation, also the responsibilities of the private sectors and the internet service providers. It should that's one thing we need to ensure that it's clearly stipulated in the implementing rules and regulations, and also the government's role in the prevention of this situation, and the capacity building of different sectors of the society.
So when you talk about the participation of the private sector, I mean, what is their responsibility here? You're talking about the internet service providers, right? So how do you define their responsibility, and how can they help prevent this?
They can prevent, because here in the Philippines, we need to improve the how we filter information for children. Although this is still debatable, at least they need to, the government need to define clearly what particular restrictions these internet service providers should be in. They need to put in place and in order to better protect children online, because right now that's one thing we need to improve on.
Mm-mm. But I guess the first line of defense here would be the home, right? Mm. The parents, and
yes,
how they, as you correctly pointed out, capacitate their children. With all these chat applications cropping up, Alan, a perpetrator only needs to invite a prey into a chat room, and that's where it all begins. So talk to the parents now. Tell them what they need to tell their kids.
This is my opportunity to appeal to the parents that, we need to take care of our kids. We need to know what their activities are online, and the best way to the very basic way to do that is to listen to them, to make their internet activity, online activity happier, if you could actually sit with them and then learn from them what they're doing online, and then you also need to tell them that how you deal with people on offline or in the real world is also applies to when you are online. Mm. So
Well, give us a more concrete example there.
Like,
because, for example,
we always teach children do not talk to strangers in the real world. So we also need to tell them online that's the same rule.
Right.
If you don't know the person, so do not engage any conversation with them, and you need to always keep your information, personal information, private.
Mm-mm. And sending pictures sometimes, you know,
yes.
it's very that seems innocent, but when a stranger asks your child to send a picture, that's a no-no right there.
No, definitely no.
Mm. What about you know, it's quite difficult for parents to even know if the person that the child is talking to is of age or a peer. How do you even talk to them about that, and how do you make sure that the people that they are talking to are their peers? And even if you know that they're peers or of the same age, how do you even know if they're not part of a syndicate? Because sometimes syndicates also use young children to lure other children. Go ahead, Alan.
So we need to teach our children how to make their information private, so that, because that's their very basic defense. If their information are private, so the fewer information we are sharing to strangers, so they won't know whether they're talking to a child or not. And second, like what I mentioned a while ago, so we need to teach our kids not to talk to strangers. It's actually more fun to actually have friends outside in the real world than online.
Mm-hmm. Okay, finally, Alan, and I'm not sure if this is still going to be part of the law, but I'm pretty sure that this is something that you're also looking at. What about life after trauma, life after being exploited? Telling this child that has been through so much that there is a life, a new life waiting for him or her after exploitation and trauma has happened. Is there a program there that should be included as well, wherein government and the private sector can work together to give these children a new chance in life?
There are child fund. Whenever we encounter a particular report of a child victim of online sexual abuse and exploitation, the good thing is we have a network of other organizations who are experts in providing case management and who can actually provide rehabilitation programs for children, so that they can get back on their feet and recover from the trauma that they've encountered. So we actually leave it to the experts. But what we need to do first is to reach out to them and rescue them. I hope that this particular new law, the anti-OSAIC law, will enable the law enforcers to do their job well and rescue more children. Moving on.
Because the clock is ticking. As you said a while ago, the numbers were up there already before the pandemic struck. The numbers even went higher during the pandemic. And without the implementing rules and regulations, even if the law has passed already or has lapsed, the bill has lapsed into law, we're losing children to these abuses and exploitation online. So what is your appeal now to the government? To the agencies that should be handling this, in terms of, making sure that the implementing rules and regulations are there already to help these children who are still under threat as we speak.
We appeal to the government to immediately draft and pass the implementing rules and regulations. That's one thing. We are here. The civil society is here to back you up. We back their war on online sexual abuse and exploitation, and the efforts led by the government to once and for all put an end to child sexual abuse and exploitation. And we vow to work closely with them, especially policymakers and law enforcement bodies, to successfully implement this. And as a child-focused and child protection agency, Child Fund will continue what we have started to fight this, and we will continue to offer capacity building, to bring together different actors, to work together, because you know we need each other during this time. Mm. And we need to put an end to this situation. Mm.
Alan Nunez there of Child Fund Philippines, thank you so much for all that you do, and thank you for being with us today.
Maraming salamat, Carmina.
Maraming salamat din. Alan Nunez there joining us this noon. We're going to take a quick break. Still ahead, a new tax scam emerges just as the SIM card registration bill nears passage. Details when we return. You're watching Dateline Philippines on ANC. World News Now, Russia is set to officially annex four territories it seized in Ukraine Friday. The Kremlin ceremony, to be led by President Vladimir Putin, follows referendums which supposedly garnered majority approval of the occupied regions to merge with Russia. The outcome of the referendums in Donetsk, Lugansk, Zaporizhia, and Kherson have been announced, make that denounced by Ukraine and Western nations as a sham.
I'd also like to briefly address the shameless and transparent effort by Russia to annex parts of neighbor Ukraine. The United States, I want to be very clear about this, the United States will never, never, never recognize Russia's claims on Ukraine's sovereign territory. This so-called referendum was a sham, an absolute sham. The results were manufactured in Moscow.
United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres, meanwhile, calls Russia's annexation plan a dangerous escalation that has no place in the modern world. The areas to be annexed by Russia represent about 15% of Ukraine's total territory. In business, the Bank of the Philippine Islands, or BPI, confirms it's in talks with Robinsons Bank over a potential collaboration. BPI, though, did not provide further details, saying disclosures will be made at the appropriate time. BPI is currently the country's fourth largest bank, with assets of over 2.35 trillion pesos. Our bank, meanwhile, is the 17th largest lender in the Philippines, with assets of almost 164 billion pesos. The revived mandatory SIM registration bill, which is touted as the solution to rampant tech scams in the Philippines, has yet to be enacted into law. But already, there appears to be a new scam in play that does not rely on prepaid SIM cards, which means it won't be solved by SIM registration. Warren De Guzman with the details.
Cyber criminals have innovated their smishing attacks once again. These criminals launch their smishing attacks by disguising themselves as reputable institutions, such as health insurance providers or banks. It's a good thing regulators have already ordered private companies and institutions to stop using links in their promotional text blasts, as this makes it much easier for the public to identify these messages as scam, even when they are using what appears to be a legitimate sender ID. As an added security measure, these same establishments are working to only send information to their customers through official channels such as their website or app messaging system. Deputy Privacy Commissioner Leandro Aguirre says this is very different compared to the targeted smishing attacks, since it does not rely on prepaid SIMs.
Nakikipag-coordinate na po kami sa mga telcos para malaman exactly kung ano nangyayari, kasi dahil nga po gumagamit na sila ng sender ID ng mga reputable companies, ina-identify po namin through the telco sino yung mga data aggregators na nanggagaling na to, kung may violation, paano nakuha yung mga yan. Tapos pinapablock natin, at the same time, kinukontinue natin yung investigation dun sa paano nangyayari itong mga gantong smishing na naman.
Meanwhile, the SIM card registration bill has been ratified by both houses of Congress and is now awaiting the signature of President Ferdinand Marcos Jr. The NPC says while this won't solve all cybercrime issues, such as the sender ID modus, it will still be an important step in the fight against such attacks.
Siguro po immediately makakatulong siya kasi yung paggamit ng mga prepaid SIM cards for certain types of smishing, hindi na po mangyayari siguro yan kasi meron ng disincentive sa paggamit niyan.
Some Filipinos are eager to register their SIMs, tired of the daily barrage of scam texts. But there are others who still oppose the measure.
Once na may nagluloko, kung sino man mangi-scam, malalaman na doon kung sino yung nagluloko. Sino yung nangi-scam, mahuhuli na siya.
Madami pa pong proseso kasi yan. Kasi kami mga mahihirap lang. Siyempre, gusto namin magkaroon ng SIM card. Eh, paano kung ayun lang ang pera namin? Pambili lang ng SIM card. Hindi po ako handa sa ganyan. Hindi po ako pabor.
Based on the SIM registration bill, which came out of the bicameral conference of the Senate and House of Representatives, public telecommunication entities or telecoms companies such as Globe, Smart, and Dito will be in charge of SIM registration. It must be done through electronic or online means. The data to be collected will be stored and protected by the telecoms, and the entire process must be done at no extra cost to the public. In this manner, small businesses that sell prepaid SIMs no longer have to worry about anything. The data to be collected by the telecoms for SIM registration include name, birthday, sex, address, the mobile number and SIM serial number being registered, and valid government identification. Valid IDs which can be used for SIM registration include passports, SSS, GSIS, driver's licenses, and many more. The proposal, however, did not mention by name the National ID or PhilSIS. The overall mandatory SIM registration has the support of Globe, Smart, and Dito, but Dito says SIM registration must be done using the National ID system as this already incorporates biometrics. Dito also suggests the storage of the data as well as the security of the SIM registry should be under the government. The National Telecommunications Commission is in charge of ironing these out in the implementing rules and regulations. It has 60 days from the law's effectivity to do so. Civil society organization democracy.net.ph has opposed mandatory SIM registration from the get-go. It maintains existing voluntary SIM registration for various services is enough, and the government should focus instead on improving cybersecurity around key databases. It adds, SIM registration may undermine online freedoms. Democracy.net.ph had previously commended President Rodrigo Duterte for vetoing mandatory SIM registration during his administration. Duterte vetoed the measure, citing the inclusion of mandatory social media registration. Lawmakers are confident Marcos will pass this bill as it no longer includes the social media provision. Warren De Guzman, ABS-CBN News.
HBO Asia original series On the Job nominated for Best TV Movie / Mini Series at the prestigious International Emmy Awards. The show features veteran Filipino actors including John Ercilia and Joel Torre. On the Job is a six-part series adapted from the 2013 film of the same title. For more on this story, head on over to news.abs-cbn.com. And that'll do it for today. Thanks for joining us. I'm Carmina Constantino. If you want to revisit today's episode, you can play back this newscast on ANC's YouTube channel and on ANC 24/7 on Facebook. Keep safe. Keep it here on ANC.